This week, how critical is the idea of an individual degree and an individual catechism to the future of Freemasonry? We'll explore a piece by William H. Boyd, in which he outlines the several reasons why the future of the craft depends on the practice of individual degrees and catechisms. Then, we'll talk about the Investigation Committee, the concerns of a Grand Lodge in the 1950s. Is there indeed, as the Grand Lodge put it, a serious lack of discretion? We'll explore some of the questions that we are charged to find the answers to within the Investigation Committee, and talk a little bit about how things have changed over the years. Lastly, I read my response from a festive board on the idea of worldwide brotherhood. What does it mean to truly be a brotherhood that spans the world? What makes us brothers? It's not just the obligation, it's something deeper. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 542. Our thanks goes out to all of the supporters of the program, whether you're a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, or a legacy partner. We thank you for your continued support of the WCY podcast, bringing you quality Masonic education since July of 2011. If you're curious on how you can help support the WCY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, where you can find out how you can accomplish the assistance for us, whether that is becoming a monthly contributor or even making a one-time gift. Everything goes right back in to producing this program. Additionally, we have a shop where you can pick up some limited edition items, including autographed copies of books we have republished or annotated, as well as added content to, or we have our lapel pin, which is our producer's pin, any number of products and things that you might find interesting. Now, I want to thank Cary Grove Lodge for having me out as the 10th response for the evening, as the 10th speaker of the evening. Over a course of rehearsals and responses for the Illinois Table Lodge ritual. I gave a little talk on the Worldwide Brotherhood of Freemasons. Also in the news, want to go ahead and mention that the April edition of the Lyceum, the official publication of the Grand Lodge of Illinois Committee on Masonic Education, is published. It's 24 or 25 pages this month with a lot of great content. And if you are a person who subscribes to Illinois Lodge of Research, or you're a Master Mason in the state of Illinois, you likely got it in your email already, as long as the Grand Lodge has your email address. It is just a digital magazine that keeps the cost down for everybody, so that is out there for you to check out. If you're wanting to read it, you can go to the Illinois Lodge of Research website, which is illinoislodgeofresearch.org. Click on Grand Lodge Education, and the latest edition of the magazine will be on top for you to read, and all past issues will be just below. In other news, some of you have been getting your copy of The Esoteric Mason, probably in the last month or so. It is a 2-time-a-year issue, so each year, 2 issues come out. It is a fantastic magazine with the right weight of paper to the page, brilliant magazine layouts, all done by Laughing Lion Publications, the same people who bring you your other favorite Masonic magazine, the Rocky Mountain Mason. And some of you love the Fraternal Review. That one's a great magazine also. With the Esoteric Mason, issue number 3. It's out right now. You can check it out. If you go to esotericmason.com, you can read my column in there, as well as some other really great articles. The Esoteric Life of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Name sound familiar? That's Sherlock Holmes, the guy who wrote Sherlock Holmes. Articles called Tubal Cain, Metallurgy and Masonry, Mystical Ascent in the Divine Liturgy, The Hunt for the Skinwalker, which I think Brother Ben Williams talks a little bit about our adventure that we had. So if all of that sounds cool, you should definitely check it out. You can subscribe to that magazine right there on esotericmason.com. Check them out. So the first piece I wanted to read for you this week was called The Criticality of Our Individual Degrees and Catechisms. Now, the word criticality sounds weird, like maybe it shouldn't be a word or that it is made up. However, criticality is a state of critical urgency, so it's like talking about how it's critical right now. So let's get into this piece. I think you guys are really going to dig it. And again, this is called The Criticality of Our Individual Degrees and Catechisms, and it's by Brother William H. Boyd. Here we go. Two of the most common suggestions I hear from very well-intentioned brothers who want to update or modernize Masonry is to provide one-day classes for the degrees and to either de-emphasize or eliminate the catechisms. Most all who suggest these ideas also say that it's important to keep the obligations so every candidate should have to learn and recite their obligations. But the catechisms, they tell us, are out of date and have little or no value in today's society, which is being crushed by demands on our collective time. The theory is that a candidate's time is better spent quickly finishing his degrees, perhaps through a one-day class, so he can start studying Masonry at his own pace, according to his own lifestyle and available time. I beg to differ. I not only believe that the full-form individual degrees and catechism are critical to unlocking the mysteries of Masonry, and that every candidate must, in all cases, receive each degree, individually, in due and ancient form, but must also learn and recite the associated catechisms. While I hold this as a personal belief, I believe these two aspects of our ritual are critical to the continuation of our craft. Question: is there a need or a role in our fraternity going forward for full-form individual degrees and their related catechisms in today's Masonry, obsolete in their current form, and in need of either shortening, combining, or dropping them completely? Can we make the degree process much shorter and much more efficient by designing new or modified methods to teach new Masons? Answer: the degrees are the allegory used to portray and share Masonry and symbolism in the language of the craft. The full-form individual degrees and the related catechisms are the primary tools to train the new Mason's mind to think in terms of allegory and symbols and break the Mason's dependence on writing and reading the written word. Through the individual degrees and associated catechisms, the new Mason learns to interpret Masonic allegory and to identify and understand Masonic symbols, both being necessary for a Mason to learn and internalize Masonry and its fundamental principles, and then participate in Masonic communications with other brothers of the craft. Discussion: Masonry likely emerged and evolved in a time before the written word, and then undoubtedly continued expanding through a period where only the rich and well-connected were allowed to go to school and were taught to read. Many believe we emerged from the ancient mystery schools in Egypt, which were generally structured in a form similar to the very initiatic process we share and practice today. The initiatic process employed among many ancient crafts generally consisted of ceremonies where a candidate was imbued with necessary knowledge according to defined increments or degrees that built on pre-existing knowledge or preceding lessons. The goal of the ceremonies was to bring each new member of the particular craft to a common level of knowledge to understand their craft and interact as an equal among craft members. The floor work of the degrees teaches us the allegorical lessons and symbols of Masonry, while the catechisms teach us how to see, recognize, and understand those allegories and symbols, and then how to communicate that knowledge. In short, we learn Masonry and its tenets through the degrees and catechisms in the same form our long-past brothers shared Masonry and their knowledge, using only their instructive tongues to communicate the lessons to receptive ears. Masonry has never been intended to be taught through written language or textbooks, tools that in all likelihood did not exist at the birth of the craft. It has in all ages been passed from one generation to the next through its allegory and symbols. It is critical for Masons to individually experience the floor work, to see, live, and experience the allegory, and then to learn the catechisms, which are tools that train the mind to translate our allegories into Masonic symbols, making it possible for us to understand, communicate, and teach fundamental Masonic principles in their true and original form. Once properly instructed in the degrees and catechisms, the candidate's mind has been opened to think, conceive, and portray lessons allegorically, and to see, read, and understand the symbols of Masonry as taught through the experiences of the degrees. But this education or training of the mind cannot happen if either the degrees or the catechisms are skipped or eliminated from the candidate's initiatic experience. If a candidate does not walk the floor during a degree, personally, marching steps and actions to words and symbols, how is he to then understand the allegory such walking represents? If he does not learn the symbols attached to his own actions and movements through the instruction and recitation of catechisms, how then is he to know the heart and soul of Masonry in its original symbolic form? If candidates do not see or feel this cognitive value from the investment of their time and work, then perhaps, my brother, that is actually what is broken, and perhaps it is that which we need to fix. Can Masonry be modernized? Perhaps. But in a time where our brothers are increasingly demanding to learn more of our Masonic history and principles, we must continue to provide the essence and core of Masonry itself through its original form, as intended by our ancestors and subsequently presented to all Masons who have traveled Masonic path before us. Our brothers seek out the writings of the great Masonic authors such as Pike, Mackey, and others, but can they truly grasp the ideas and interpretations by those writers if they have not both experienced and learned the essential lessons conveyed through the degrees and catechisms? We must teach new Masons how to think allegorically and to identify, relate, and apply Masonic symbols as they study our Masonic tenets and build their own Masonic edifice. Do we seek to become and be Masons, continuing our craft and our ancestors' impressive traditions? Or do we seek to become a group of men who simply read and talk about how Masons historically shared their craft? Masonry and all of its beauty and its secrets are contained in its full form within our allegories and symbols, and it is up to us to seek them and to teach new Masons how to learn and share them in historically due form if we are to propagate the craft and its beautiful principles into the future. Brother William H. Boyd, raised in Somerset Lodge 1205 in Somerset, Texas, in January of 1999. He's presided over several appended bodies and served as the worshipful master of a few different lodges, and he's even been the district deputy grand master for the Masonic District number 39A of the Most Worshipful Grand Lodge of Texas in 2017. He's also served as a district education officer, and you can contact him if you find Brother Bill's Masonic Education Facebook group for Master Masons, where he shares educational material and papers on lodge administration, policies, and procedures. So why did I read this? There has been so much talk about the degree process based on Ohio's most recent Grandmasters Festival, where they raised over 700 guys in a single day. There have been the gnashing of teeth, as we say. There have been praises. The responses have spanned the gamut. But I think I have some questions about this whole thing. And obviously, Brother William Boyd here is advocating for the individual degree and catechisms. And I like that. I like the idea of individual degrees and catechisms. But something that really needs to be said here, and I really mean this, is that oftentimes when we begin to talk about these festivals, these one-day classes or blue lightnings, whatever you want to call them, and we criticize the practice, we have a slew of brothers who come out in force and they assume we are attacking them as brothers for having been part of or were a product of one of these festival days. They have said things to the effect of, oh, so we're not real Masons? And this is not the point at all of the critique of the festivals. Of course you're real brothers. You are no different. I mean it. I mean, like, right now, if you have ever witnessed this kind of reaction out there, or maybe you have given this reaction to me or somebody else who's talked about problem with the one-day class, it's not about you in this instance, right? You are my brother, regardless. What I think gets lost in translation here is that we are upset that certain brothers who have gone through the process of a festival day were not able to receive something that we got, that we received, and we wish you had. That's all. And we understand that many brothers, they don't care. It's okay. They're okay with it. And that's fine. And maybe there's something to be said also for the one-day class brothers who have great experiences this way. And they say, well, Robert or, you know, Joe, whoever is, you know, talking about these one-day classes, they might say, well, you didn't experience what I did, so how can you say it wasn't as prolific of a life event as what you described? That is totally true. So we need to look at both sides here. But again, there is no distinction of brothers, regardless of how you went through. Because what we want to do ultimately is lock in the best practice or see where the best practices can be had and then try to utilize those. And if it comes out, right, that one-day classes are amazing, then certainly I think you will see more Grand Lodges adopting them more often. Now, something else I find really interesting about this whole concept is we have so many people who are like really into TO or they're really into the initiatic experience. And they say, you can't do these massive festival days. And what is so interesting to me, again, is that had you been a practitioner of any ancient religion, let's just say you lived in ancient Greece and you went through one of the rites of passage, some sort of mystery school, you almost assuredly were one person in a massive audience of other individuals. You did not necessarily partake in the play that was being exemplified before your eyes. Now, granted, you may have been drunk or slightly drugged. However, the experience was one of an audience member. So, we need to reconcile those two things. Christopher Hodapp recently wrote a bit about this whole shenanigan that happened with the two quote-unquote sides that were arguing about the effectiveness and legitimacy of one-day classes. And you can read that on his blog. I will make sure that I link it back in the show notes. It is not a super long one. In fact, I considered reading it for this episode, but instead opted to read the response I did for the Table Lodge. If you are wanting to hear it and you don't feel like reading it, just drop me a line in the comments section on Facebook or Instagram, wherever we're posting this, and I'll see it. And if we get enough people to say, yeah, read Chris's post, then I'll go ahead and do that for you. I know a lot of you are on the road and you get your readings and stuff from the podcasts and you're on the way to work or whatever the case is. So I am happy to do the work and put it out there for you so that you can consume it the way you need to consume it. And so before we go to the next piece, I want to ask the Craftsman Plus, can we come together and maybe put together kind of a mastermind? I would love to know, in kind of a Venn diagram sort of situation, what does the individual degree give you that you think you could not get from the class setting? And you're only allowed to say this if you did traditional individual degree, catechism avenue. And then I would like to hear from some of our guys who went through festivals. And I would like you guys to give some feedback and say what perhaps unique experience you got from the festival that you didn't or you don't think necessarily could have been accomplished in the sense of an individual degree and catechism traditional exemplification. Because I am positive there are pluses on both sides, as well as negatives. And of course, we'll keep it civil and we'll look at this as just a point for discussion. With that said, the next piece I wanted to read for you actually stems from something. It's a really crazy story. And you can read the article in the Lyceum this month, but there's more to this story than what I wrote for the article. And so, first of all, let me paint the picture for you. This is kind of story time. Pour yourself a nice new cup of coffee, a tea, or whatever you're drinking. Put your sandals on, kick your feet up, wrap yourself in a blanket, cuddle up for a little story. Just kidding. The story is effectively that I went down, I was doing a talk at the Valley of Danville. I stayed with Brother Darren Laners, and while we were down there, we were going to do a ghost investigation of his lodge. And we did this. And it was a fantastic evening. We did it with GhostNet Paranormal. If you're interested about those guys, they can be found on their website, GhostNet Paranormal. And also, we did an interview with them on the Beyond the Fourth Veil podcast. We had Brother Travis Kane come on that program and talk a little bit about the process of ghost and paranormal investigation. So anyway, here we are in the lodge, and I'm a person who just walks around the lodge and looks at all the nooks and crannies and things. And so I'm by the secretary's desk and I'm looking around because typically you find things on the desk that haven't been moved in 20 years. Literally. You know, you'll find newspaper clippings from the 70s or 80s or even earlier. And so here I am, just kind of sitting in the secretary's chair, looking around. Nobody's in there but besides Darren at the other end of the lodge hall. And I look over to the east, and so I look directly left, and sitting there is the pedestal that we would use to gavel. And I look at it, and I stand up, and I walk over to it, and I just decide to lift the top of the pedestal off. Now, it's marble, and I lift it off, and what do you know? Inside were several documents, almost like a time capsule. There was a list of officers from like the 1960s. There was a receipt for dues that had been torn up. There was a booklet that had been sent out to every lodge regarding how to investigate a petitioner. And this was really amazing. We couldn't believe it was just sitting there underneath the pedestal. So I took it all out. I took pictures of it. I put it all back. Darren did the same. You know, we took pictures and made sure that everything got put back the right way. I then checked the other pedestals to find nothing. But check this out. So the phrase, a serious lack of discretion, is what was used in the Grand Lodge letter that they had sent out for the investigation committees. So here's the article. For years, almost from the beginning, Masonic writers, contemporaries, and lecturers have been writing about the West Gate. The West Gate is the term used to describe the place of entrance into our gentle craft. Using the West Gate means that we are guarding our craft from those who may not be a good candidate for Freemasonry. On February 16, 1951, the Grand Master of the State of Illinois approved a packet to be sent to every lodge in the jurisdiction. A stern letter and a small booklet. The text of the letter is below. Quote, Dear Worshipful Master, enclosed you will find three copies of the booklet Investigation, which has just been published by this committee at the direction of the Grand Master. The officers of our Grand Lodge are seriously concerned with the lack of discretion shown by some investigation committees in not carefully screening petitioners to our lodges. In these unsettled times, proper and thorough investigation is vital to the very existence of our lodges and the progress of our fraternity. The Grand Master has approved and recommends the procedure outlined. To ensure that this is done, the Worshipful Master should place a copy of these instructions in the hands of each member of such a committee. It is our sincere hope that this will materially aid the craft in following your instructions and that your work and our lodges will prosper accordingly. Sincerely and fraternally, Committee on Masonic Information, C.B. Steele, Chairman. End quote. Today, various lodges have adopted additional programs for guarding the West Gate that supplement the lodge's investigation committee and their reporting efforts. For instance, Pennsylvania's Grand Lodge runs a criminal background check at the Grand Lodge level. If the candidate is clear, no felonies, the lodge is allowed to further investigate and vote on him. Here in our jurisdiction, Illinois, a criminal background check is not required at any level, although lodges may adopt a policy of requiring one to aid in the investigation committee's work. In Illinois, a common misconception is that a felony bars a man from becoming a Freemason. It does not. The committee should ascertain the answers to 16 recommended questions as outlined in the Grand Lodge of Illinois Investigation Committee Guide. During the investigation, these questions are outlined below. Do they believe in a supreme being? Can the petitioner read and write English? Does the petitioner's wife and family approve of his petition? Does the petitioner understand Masonry's position on insurance? Does the petitioner have the financial ability to become a Mason? Will he be able to devote the time and effort that is required to study, prepare, and complete degree work? To what other organizations does the petitioner belong? How did the petitioner learn about Freemasonry? Is the petitioner of lawful age, and does he satisfy the Illinois residence requirements? Is the petitioner of sound mental health? What is the petitioner's occupation? Has the petitioner ever submitted a prior petition? Does the petitioner know of any reason why he cannot or should not become a Freemason? Is this decision of the petitioner's own free will and accord? Has the petitioner ever been in trouble? Why does the petitioner want to become a Mason? On question 15, has the petitioner ever been in trouble? A yes does not disqualify them. The investigation committee should inquire as to what the trouble was for, if severe enough, what the felony was for, how long ago was it, what were the circumstances of the alleged crime. If the committee feels that the man should still be allowed to continue or not, it is up to them. They then report to the worshipful master of the lodge individually, and most importantly, details should not be disclosed. The committee member should only not recommend or recommend the petitioner for membership. For the 1951 Guide to Investigation that was sent out along with the original letter, check out the following pages. Happy investigation, and guard well the West Gate. What then follows is several pages that I just scanned in on the investigation committee guide that was published all the way back in 1951. It is interesting. There is a poem that is on page 2 called Beyond Guard by Wilbur D. Nesbitt. There is a section on the duties of the investigation committee, as well as several other areas to be in consideration. So, again, if you would like to get a copy of the Lyceum, please visit the IllinoisLodgeOfResearch.com, click on Grand Lodge, and then click on the most recent issue. For our Craftsman Plus, I would love to know, how intense or loose is your investigation committee? Let's talk a little bit about it. Brotherhood, a worldwide brotherhood. And it is the response to the idea of a worldwide brotherhood, which was written for the Table Lodge at Cary Grove Lodge, right here in Cary Grove, Illinois. Freemasonry is considered the worldwide brotherhood, a society of individuals bound together not unlike a spider web, intersections held together by the silk strands that span the world. While grabbing a coffee from your local coffee shop, you often take the coffee with one hand, drop the change in the tip jar, and say, "Thanks, brother." The profane world uses this in the sense of a brotherhood in humanity and possibly thinks nothing of this. What about when you talk to your boss and at the end of a conversation or email with him, you say, "Thanks, brother." While we think this is a slip of the tongue, is it? Or are we just exemplifying what we practice within this royal art? We are taught to regard the human species as one family. And here we are, a subset of the human story, the human evolution of thought and of consciousness, gathered together under the banner of Freemasonry. Each of us took an obligation that bound us even closer together, an obligation that is often overly focused on. What do I mean? The obligation is one half of what we are charged to do. That we would not reveal our ways, words, and practices to the uninitiated. But the other half, arguably the more important part, of what we agree to do to uplift humanity by relieving the distresses of our fellow creatures. To never leave someone in want if within our power to provide for them. To be the best example of human evolutionary thought and progress possible. That those profane in the world with whom we interact on a daily basis might be so inspired not to become Freemasons, but that they imitate the values we openly espouse, and more importantly, that they witness in action. This connection we share is a grouping of individuals who have been made brothers by a sincere wish to be serviceable to our world. This pale blue dot on the outskirts of the Milky Way galaxy, sitting in the perfect basking glow of our sun. To stand for truth, as objective as possible while imagining the subjective views of others. To imagine being in their shoes, as it were. To relieve those around us and in the world. Think about Ukraine. Think about third world countries. Think about our own neighborhoods. make no distinctions with those that need assistance. We are bound, as we say, by an obligation, a tie stronger than human hands can impose. How is this possible? The consciousness of an individual is a powerful thing. In one macabre example, permit me to remind you of The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. Quote, "But once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object there was none. But ere long, I felt myself getting pale and wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied a ringing in my ears. But still they sat and still chatted. The ringing became more distinct. It continued and became more distinct. I talked more freely to get rid of the feeling, but it continued and gained definitiveness. Until, at length, I found that the noise was not within my ears." End quote. The man's consciousness would not allow him to go unpunished. It could not bear the weight of such a deed. His was murder. In this same way, this pained consciousness is an unbearable weight upon each of us while the world struggles. Ours is inaction. Our brotherhood ensures that while we are bound to make the world a better place, we are also bound to relieve each other, and to, when we fall to a knee, imitate him who was able to, for a time, carry a cross for the man of Nazareth. You all know of our history. It's laid upon our minds at every meeting. It's recounted in every book on the topic. You'll get no such recitation from me on this occasion. I instead will ask the question of where the deeper history of our craft comes from, its origin. Indeed, Masonry begins in the heart, the place where we were first prepared. To understand our true history, then, is it not necessary to speak about the nature of love, the nature of empathy, to follow our thoughts like a strand of thread through our memories on how we feel in this very moment? Go ahead, disconnect from this for just a moment. Feel the table with your hands. Look at the person, your brother, sitting next to you. Be here now. Where does this spark of whatever it is come from? Surely, it is of divine nature. Does it not feel powerful to hold in your grasp this feeling of presentness? This gift from the Creator to its children that we as a brotherhood so often take a full drink of its cup, nectar so sweet that we wish to give it to all the world. To do this requires us to work to ease the suffering and pain of others so that they too may be able to exercise true life, love, and liberty. We must assist in clearing a path for others so they might also take the road less traveled. We are gathered here in this hall as Freemasons, brothers who can travel anywhere in the world and work to better those places, to spread ideas of liberty, equality, justice, truth, and relief. Are we not a progressive moral science? We have a duty to work within our communities. We assisted in the development of the public school systems. This cannot be debated. We are a brotherhood spanning the world which has effectively agreed on a new world order. Progress is an overwhelming part of the Masonic identity. To be aligned against it is un-Masonic. I ask our brothers here assembled to remember a portion of ritual long since removed from the Illinois standard, yet is present in the majority of other jurisdictions. Quote, "Brethren, you are now about to quit this sacred retreat of friendship and virtue to mix again with the world. Amidst its concerns and employments, forget not the duties you have heard so frequently inculcated and forcibly recommended in this lodge. Be diligent, prudent, temperate, discreet. Remember that around the altar you have promised to befriend and relieve every brother who shall need your assistance. These generous principles are to extend further. Every human being has a claim upon your kind offices." End quote. Do good unto all. We are indeed a worldwide brotherhood whose ideas, actions, and outcomes will shape the future. As we explore the oceans, create laws to govern people, develop sciences that will no doubt birth the first true artificial intelligence, and travel into the stars for new frontiers, we will no longer be a worldwide brotherhood, but something more, truly universal. That's it for this week. I want to thank everybody for coming with us on this edifying journey. We'll get back to the tarot card draws next week. I'm sorry I wasn't able to do one this week. I want to thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners for being a part of the WCY podcast, and it is because of you we are able to continue doing this program every single week. We go dark just 2 weeks a year for Christmas and New Year's, and the rest of the time you're getting 50 episodes of the WCY podcast ad-free at no cost, all because of the generosity of brothers and friends. So thank you all so much, whether you are somebody who is financially contributing to us or even just sharing the links with your brothers and friends. This is all so appreciated, and I cannot thank you enough. Until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.